Welcome to the Architect My Life podcast. I'm Maya Schlachter, serial entrepreneur and CEO of the MGS Global Group, where we serve architecture and design firms with project delivery, such as drafting, 3D visualization, and graphics production support. I'm also the founder of Architect My Life. My goal is to help creative entrepreneurs such as architects and other design-related professionals scale their business to six or seven figures. I also show them how it's possible to do this while living a rich life outside their work, reclaiming time and energy for themselves and their families. Creatives were taught how to master their craft, but not taught how to run and grow a business. Each podcast episode features a different entrepreneur from the creative industry who shares their journey towards success. If you have a growth story that others in our community could benefit from hearing, stick around to the end of the show to see how you could be a guest in one of our future episodes. Now, let's dive into this episode. Hi, everybody. I'm really excited to introduce our next guest, Vivian Lee. Vivian Lee is the new studio executive director of Woods Bagot. Woods Bagot is a global architecture firm with over 17 studios worldwide and over 900 people, I think close to 1,000 people worldwide. So Vivian has led award-winning projects all over the world in terms of hotel, retail, residential projects. She is also the co-chair of the AIA New York Women in Architecture Committee, where she mentors young architects and promotes women in leadership. Vivian was recently elevated to the College of Fellows by the AIA in 2020. So this fellows is really one of the highest recognition in the architecture profession and in design, and because of her accomplishments and her contribution to the profession. And I just might add, I already talked to Vivian about this. Before I first met her, I was in a lunch with my friend who's an AIA co-chair in Cleveland. When I told her that I have a meeting with Vivian Lee, she said, "Oh, the Vivian Lee?" And I just wanted to share with you that, yep, it's the Vivian Lee. Without further ado, welcome to the Architect My Life podcast, Vivian.
Thank you so much for the intro, Aya. It was funny, the Vivian Lee. I don't think I ever heard anyone consider me to be the Vivian Lee. You know, there are a lot of other Vivian Lees around, not to be confused with Vivian Lee and Gone with the Wind. Because I used to get that all the time. Like, "Oh, Vivian Lee, Gone with the Wind." It's like, yeah. And I say, "Hey, you know, I'm the authentic. I'm the not Vivian Lee from Gone with the Wind, but Vivian Lee from like Bruce Lee, Vivian Lee." You know, I want to associate myself with someone who is, we can like really kick ass, you know.
Yeah, no, but you really kick ass, because I've heard about you before, and our chapter has been wanting to invite you as well. I said, "Yep, the Vivian Lee." So Vivian, tell us about your background, and you know, that's always a good way to start, especially for our audience in Australia and Hong Kong, because people know you in the U.S. So.
Sure. Well, to start my background, you have to go way, way back, right? And 50 plus years. And that's all I'm going to disclose about my age, 50 plus years. I was born in Taiwan, and my family actually immigrated to South America when I was 7. So we moved to a country in the middle of South America called Paraguay. And I was in Paraguay for close to 6 years. I went to grade school over there and went to a nice little Catholic school. And I learned how to say, you know, "Our Father" in Spanish, you know, "My Padre nuestro que San Cecilio santificado sea tu nombre," et cetera, et cetera. And actually, you know, this, you know, when I was in Paraguay, it's a very different culture and how people live, how people communicate with each other. And I was a little kid, you know, and we lived in a little house just surrounded by fields. And, you know, as a kid, that was the best thing you can ask for. And I think in a way it kind of shaped me to who I am today. But, and I can get into a little bit more about that and how my curiosity in architecture came about. But moving on from Paraguay, my family immigrated to the States when I was 13. and we went to California. So I grew up there, went to high school, and went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo for my undergrad. And when I was in Cal Poly, they had an international program. And it was always my desire to go abroad and see the world. So I applied myself really hard. I studied really hard trying to get selected. And I was selected to go to Florence, Italy. It's an international program over there. And I did my fifth year in Florence. And it was great. Again, you know, who doesn't like Italy, right? The food, the culture, the architecture, the men, and
The men.
the language, beautiful language. And I really just fell in love. And I think also the fact that I grew up in South America, sort of the background is very similar, and Spanish and Italians is also quite similar. So when I graduated, I originally was planning to come back to the States, of course, and then there was a recession, and it was a pretty bad one, 1991, for those of you old enough to remember. And I figured that there's really no point for me to come back to the States. I'll be competing with like a job with, I don't know, 10,000 applicants. It was almost as bad as 2008, and it was almost as bad as the pandemic. So my decision was to stick around Italy and get some experience, and to come back one day with a different set of experiences in my portfolio and my resume. Because, you know, one thing that I do want to mention is that you always kind of want to be someone different. You want to stand out. You want to, if you have a pile of resumes, like you just review 300 resumes, what is something that really pops up, right? Something that is different, that makes that person different and unique. So I decided to stay in Italy, and I was working for a small firm, and they actually needed someone who spoke English because a lot of the projects were overseas, and we're designing Dolce & Gabbana stores around the world. And that was really quite fun, especially sort of my first real job. And I've done internship and all that through college, but it was my real job with a real paycheck. And I was on the phone talking to people from Jeddah to Tel Aviv to Hong Kong to Singapore and Houston, Texas, right? And it was just fascinating how, with my skill set, and this is AutoCAD version 12, and you know, and it's still very much very primitive software. And but I was able to connect with the world through telephone and through a fax machine. And it was such an amazing experience. And so basically, because of that, I think how that really shaped my career, my profession, and having this kind of a global connection. And of course, you get to a certain point, and you know, you have to face the fact that you have to get license, you have to come back and take your license exams, like, yikes. So I decided to actually, after 6 years living in Italy, I decided to come back. So I went back to San Francisco. At the time, I joined the San Francisco International Airport team with SOM, and I was there not for very long, because when I was studying for my exam, someone against there was someone taking a class, one of those classes that you take to study. And he was from Glenston. He's like, "Oh, you know, I heard that you just came back from Italy and you did some interior work. Would you like to join Gensler?" I was like, "Sure." You know, I went for an interview, and I think it was the longest interview I had. I think it lasted for like almost 3 hours. They showed me around. They talked to me, and next thing I know, they said, "You know, we would like to offer you a job. Would you like to go to Hong Kong?" I'm like, okay. So I was physically in the San Francisco office for about 6 months or 8 months, I can't remember now. And I had the privilege to meet Art Gensler, just amazing, amazing human being. You know, he is definitely someone that I looked up to. And so I think it was 1997. I packed my bags. They shipped me over to Hong Kong, flying business class, and which is my first time. I was like, ooh, you
Oh,
know,
wow.
I'm actually a grown up now. I got to Hong Kong, and then and asked myself, I still remember I landed at the airport, and I was going to the terminal, and I said to myself, "What the heck did I just do? Like, you know, moving across the world and starting a new job." And it was such an amazing experience. I was working a lot, but at the same time, I learned so much, and I was able to work on a project in Beijing, where my mom is originally when she was from when she was a little kid, and it was just sort of getting in touch with the motherland. I worked projects in Hong Kong. I got to travel to Tokyo. I got, you know, a chance to travel to the Philippines. I actually went to the Philippines to make a pitch, and I think we were going after a project. And it was just amazing. And I think this is when I was in my mid-20s. So I was there for a short 2 years. This is during the handover. So I was there from, I was 28. So I was there for 2 years. And then the Asian market crashed. I'm not sure if you remember this. This is 1999. Asian, and I was like, what's going on, right? You know, all these recessions following me. So I decided to, I had to leave basically, you know, to pursue my career further. And in Hong Kong, I used to go with all my colleagues, my friends, a lot of the expats over there. And, you know, we, you know, usually go to karaoke. And I remember the farewell party that they gave me, went to a karaoke and we were singing New York, New York by Frank Sinatra. Obviously, you know, like Frankie said, you know, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. So that really get my hopes up. It's like, you know, I'm gonna try my luck in New York. And I came to the city, wonderful city, and I moved around a lot, actually. I started working for Peter Marino, a very high-end interior design firm. And then from there, I felt like, you know what, I need to try something else, because since my experience in Italy and at Gensler, it was mostly interiors, I wanted to try to do architecture and learn how to detail waterproofing, right? So that's the difference between like interiors and architecture, is the waterproofing details. And so I went and got myself a position as a project architect at EYP, which is Ai Hong Yaphe Prescott. And I really had an amazing sponsor and mentor, John Schiff, who really took me under his wings, knowing that I didn't have much architectural background or experience, but he literally gave me a project and said, here, this is your project, take it, and run with it. So it was a fine arts building for NJCU, which is in Jersey City. Amazing, amazing experience. And I learned so much on that through that process. And then from there, I went and designed yet another high school in Newark, New Jersey. So I really feel the connection designing schools and really doing something, giving back, you know, to the community, and design a space for students to learn and to grow. And it was really, it's very satisfying, very gratifying. And then from EYP, I was there for, I think, for about 4 years or 5 years, and I moved on to Poshak Partnership. And Poshak is now it's known as ENIAD. It's an incredible firm, very grounded, amazing work. And that's sort of the training grounds. Like, if you want to become an architect, you want to go to Poshak Partnership. And I was very lucky to yet to work on another school, and just by coincidence, is actually the Frank Sinatra School of the Arts in Astoria, Queens.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
And a wonderful experience. And then my partner, who is also an architect, and I'm sure a lot of you out there who are architects, you know, you either marry or end up dating an architect, because we spend so much time in the studio that you socialize with the people that you spend most time with. So at the time, my partner was browsing through the AIA website, and he came across this ad, and it was said, international design firm looking for an Italian/English speaker who uses MicroStation. And, you know, I think at the time in New York, there were three firms that used MicroStation. It was Foster, Poshek, and Richard Meyer and Partners. And and they also wanted someone with a graduate degree. Oh, and one thing I forgot to mention is when I was in Italy, I also got my graduate degree through Syracuse University, which they had a program in Italy at the time.
Wow.
So in the job description, it didn't say who the employer was. It was looking for a Italian English speaker who uses MicroStation and has a graduate degree. I'm like, well, that sounds like my resume, right? So I'm going to go ahead and apply. And then the response came back. It's like, oh, you know, we'd like to interview. We'd like to set up an interview at Richard Meyer & Partners. I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing. And I remember the year before, I was in Rome, and the Adabashi Museum was under construction. And I just thought, like, wow, it must be so amazing to work for someone like Richard Meyer and in a project in Italy. And guess what? I was hired not to work in the Adabashis, but on another project in Italy. So, and because of my language skills and in Italian, I was able to step in and as a project architect. And literally, I oversaw and worked on a CD set, everything in Italian, specs, everything. And to add to that, it was a LEED Platinum building, and this is when LEED just started, and I got LEED accredited. And I had to basically train a lot of the consultants, local consultants, to let them know what LEED is about. And they were like, "Ma che cosa un MERF?" You know, MERF filter, you know, with their Italian accent. It was great. And then, of course, the contractor, everyone's on board. So proud of the fact that the project got LEED Platinum. It's probably one of the first buildings in Europe that got LEED Platinum at the time. It's like, I think 2005, maybe even before that. Anyway, so a little bit about my background. So from Richard Meyer & Partners, I was there for 15 years. I got elevated to principal, and then Me Too happened, right? And that's one of the reasons I felt like it's time to move on and find other opportunities. And I was just very, very fortunate to have met Nick Corrales, who's the CEO of Woods Bagot, who wanted to bring me on as the director of the New York office and run the studio here in New York. So here I am. And after 2 years, I started just before the pandemic in February 2020. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride, right? Because obviously most of us know during the pandemic, especially the first year, has been extremely challenging. No one knew what was happening. A lot of the projects were put on hold. And I think now we're in growth mode. We can't hire fast enough. And I have to say, I'm in really, really deep gratitude to Woods Bagot for supporting me this past 2 years, but for the really incredible, talented colleagues that I have, the principals and the people that work in the studio really made a huge difference. And having everyone to support you, to have your, to have your back and vice versa, is something that I think a lot of friends should be aspired to do. And to be able to find this kind of collaborative environment has been life-changing. So again, so that's where I am today.
So it's very impressive that you're new at Woods Bagot, you're studio executive director, and then you have another problem, big, like a pandemic. So how was the transition? You're new, and then you have the entire team, and then you probably haven't met a lot of them, or I don't know, how did you do this?
I'm not the first one. I'm hearing a lot of people have been hired during the pandemic. A lot of things was Zoom, right? So, and sometimes we'll get on a call with a potential client or existing client, and I would joke, and it's like, I know most of my colleagues in 2D, in digitally 2D. And then we have actually hired quite a few people during the pandemic as well. It is hard, but I think, architects are very resilient, and we're creative in terms of finding solutions and how to get work done. I can't lie, it has been really tough. And like many firms, there has been some furloughs, some layoffs, and that was also very tough. I'm a people person. Like, I relate to people, and having to do something like that, especially someone that you met not for so long, and having to do that is being a lesson to be learned. But I think over time, because of the support that we have, and because we are a global studio, you know, different parts of the world might be doing a little bit better that will support us, and we'll do the same when we're doing okay. And one thing about Wispaget, we have a lot of the intercompany work. So for instance, when we were a little bit slow, we did a competition with our Shanghai office and for office building in Fuzhou, and we won. So that was great. So we are able to collaborate, you know, across regions and cultures, right? And we, you know, architecture, beautiful design, you know, transcends, you know, I think any language that you speak, right? So it's the language of design that sort of connects us together. And at the same time, we were also doing competitions for our student in Dubai. And when things got busy in San Francisco, we'll lend one of our interior designers to work on a project in San Francisco. So there's that kind of collaboration that is, I think, very helpful when you have that structure to support you. So now our whole firm is busy. we are trying to find new talent, and we're evolving, and what's kind of interesting to see also, the pandemic really showed us how we can work with each other and how we can be how we can better work with technology. And the fact that we are, because of a global firm, we do already collaborate a lot of Teams calls or Zoom calls, and so it wasn't so hard for us to do remote, but I do really miss that, coming back and engage people and build that culture, you know, which is something that really bonds people together. Like, I'm here in the office right now. You can probably see I have little models behind me, and we have adopted the hybrid schedule. So we ask people to be in the office 3 days a week, and 2 are flexible, remote. You can do remote. I personally prefer to come to the office every day, because I can only do so much in my tiny little apartment. Yeah. So, and it is New York, you know, and pretty much our dining room table became our work desk. Office. And I just need to get away from that. But also, I think, you know, we are truly adopting the flexible schedule, because the 3 days that you are in the studio really is really what works with your project team. So say you might, you know, better work, you know, you have standing meetings with the client on Mondays and Wednesdays, and maybe you can come in Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, or you can come in Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. It's really up to you. But we do want a little bit of that in-person collaboration, because I think that is really truly where design, we can foster design, and especially for the younger architects that when they start off, they need to have that kind of a mentorship. They need to, you know, I want to be able to walk over and see someone's screen. It's like, oh, what are you working on? Let's talk about this, right? Or someone overhearing me saying something, it's like, oh, I just heard you talk about this project, you know, can you tell me a little bit more? I think that is what's missing when you work remotely, because you're kind of working in a vacuum, right? You don't know what's going on the other side. So I really miss that. And not to say that, as you mentioned earlier, I'm the co-chair for Women in Architecture. We're just so glad that we finally have our in-person events back at the Center for Architecture. And when we get a bunch of women together, we cannot stop talking, especially after being remote for 2 years. And half the time we're like, after the event is over, we'll be standing outside of the building, you know, just trying to catch up. Yeah. We actually have our, this Wednesday, we have our dinner roundtable. So we meet together at the Center for Architecture, and then we split into We have, I think, 6 restaurants now reserved for a table for 4. So it's almost like a blind date, right? You sign up, we have a spreadsheet, we have a Google spreadsheet, and you sign up. We have the restaurants selected, and you sign up with whoever. So you see someone you don't know, and we have the number of years and the where the person works, so you can sort of pick and choose. It's kind of fun because you might end up meeting someone and establish a relationship or do some networking. So this
is now the Women in Architecture New York City.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
so
yes.
So anyone who becomes a member at the AIA New York can automatically become a member at the WI8, or do you have to apply for that?
No, there's no application whatsoever.
You just volunteer to be part of it, right?
Yes, yes. And our meetings, our events are open to the public, open to all. In fact, you even need to be an AI member to attend. We have special fees for AI members. You know, AI members usually all the events are free. If you are not an AI member, you pay, I don't know, like $5 or $10 per event, which is not much. But we do really encourage, it's funny because we're not exclusive to women. We'd love to have men to participate because a lot of our programs are really excellent. And it's not about women's issues. It's about, really kick-ass women like doing amazing work, right? So and for the last couple of I've been coach here for the last 4.5 years, and every year we just have really amazing program with really incredible, just so inspiring panelists and speakers. And
You have 24 events a year.
We average about 24. That's insane, right? That's like almost averaged 2 events a month. Sometimes we have 3 events, and during the summer, we'll try to take it easy and maybe have 1 event and maybe not have the committee meeting. And also in December, right? Just because me and my coach here, Rosalind, and we actually do need a break. We are human beings. We do need a break sometimes because it's literally a full-time job, but at the same time, it's incredibly satisfying. And you see the impact that you have, and some of the comments and feedback that we get from our members are just, it just warms your heart, and it reminds you why you do what you do. And this is something that I definitely feel like after practicing for 30 years, it's a way for me to give something back, not just to my peers, but giving back to the future generation of architects, especially women architects.
Yeah. So I have a question, follow-up question to that. Like, I attended your Founders Forum, Women Who Break the Biases. And that was my first event that I attended online. And I think that was very eye-opening for women who, like for you, I'm sure you've attained a lot of success based on what you told me the last 10 minutes, 20 minutes, but I'm sure it wasn't all that rosy. You know, we all have had our own set of issues, especially when you're a powerful woman in architecture. There are some people who might get jealous of your success. I mean, it's never that easy. So again, my I have like 2 or 1 question for you in terms of, that we all women encounter, like how have you dealt with that? How did you deal with adversity as a woman in architecture, and you're at the top now? How did you battle that? And the reason why I'm asking is because for people who didn't join the women who break the biases, they talked a lot about, how they were able to deal with adversity. Do you have an experience you can share?
Well, not so much adversity. I have to say that I've been pretty fortunate. I think that the fundamental thing is that if you love what you do, and I know that you love what you do, and I can hear when you talk about your work. If you love what you do, you tend to do a pretty good job, right? Because you come into work happy, you look forward to your next task or your responsibilities, and I find women really supportive. And this is the community that we have built at Women in Architecture, everyone supporting each other. And you probably, if you attended the event, we usually try to find a good cross section of panelists and where they can learn from each other. And they all had, they all face some challenges, but they all had come up with incredible ways and funny ways to combat those, right? So I think it was Nina who mentioned how when she started going to doing CA, and the contractor wanted her to come up with an answer, and I think her supervisor is like, don't ever give an answer at the job site, always come back, you know, and then say, we'll get back to you. And then she said how she started doing that. And then she realized like, well, maybe people think I don't have the answer, that I don't know what I'm talking about, that I have to take it back to my supervisor and ask, you know, my supervisor for an answer or for permission to say what I have to say. And it's like, forget that. I know what I'm doing. I know this is my project. I know my project very well. So she eventually, she, you know, instead of going back, she was answering all the questions herself and building that kind of on the respect and the confidence, right? And at the job site. And I thought that was just so great to hear. And I think that's one of the lessons that you learn. Like you need to be authentic to who you are and be confident of your own abilities and really truly believe what you know yourself. And I think when you do that, it really shines. And I think of course there are challenges, but it's not because there are challenges because I'm a woman. I think the challenge is because of the profession in overall. I think I'm also being fortunate that I do not see any kind of adversities because I'm a woman. In fact, it's I always find, you know, a challenge to be an opportunity, right? You turn challenges into opportunities. And I'm sure you'll hear that from a lot of women, is that many times when we go to a meeting or when we have to do a presentation, we have to be not 100%, we have to be 200% ready, right? We need to make sure that we know everything that we, you know, what we need to present, what we talk about. We need to know our material. We have to build that confidence. And that helps us push forward. And I have to say, sometimes like you work harder because you had to make sure that you don't ever get caught, you know, without an answer. And I love that challenge, the fact that I always have to push myself to make sure that, you know, I have all the answers whenever a client or a contractor is asking me, or even my colleagues and peers, right? So it pushes myself to work harder and to better myself, to improve myself.
So I always believe that knowledge is power, and power builds because you're knowledgeable. It's already your confidence booster, you know, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
So talk about the, I know that the WIA New York has four pillars. Maybe just touch a little bit about your mission there at the WIA.
Yeah. The four pillars, actually, this is something that it was a takeaway from the Women's Leadership Summit that I attended back in, I think it was 2016 or 17. And I just thought it was such a great framework to our profession. So the four pillars is based on design and leadership, professional practice and development, workplace culture, and advocacy and activism. And based on those four pillars, the Women in Architecture Committee, we plan our events and our programs based on all those. So for instance, we have under design leadership, we have our Friday morning talks. We used to call it the Friday breakfast meetings, because usually we serve breakfast at the Center for Architecture. Because of the pandemic, we moved to morning leadership talk, and usually is a woman design leader with a pretty solid track record. You know, we have people like Francine Hubin, who designed the new public library, Stavros Niarchos Foundation Library. We had Andrew Lamberti, who was a partner at Bignoli's. We had Billy Tin. We had Harriet Harris, who is the dean at Pratt. We had I mean, the list just goes on and on. I mean, it's just an array of incredible women. And in fact, it just yesterday I received a confirmation from Elaine Molinar, the partner at Snohetta, to be our May morning leadership speaker. So we're super excited about that. So it's going to be May 29th, and just keep out for the announcement. She's another incredible woman who was one of the original founders of Snohetta, and has been with them for, I think, past 32 years or 34 years now, and just doing amazing work, really sort of an inspiring career that she has had.
So it's amazing that you do a lot of all this programs, and I'm sure men would like to join too.
Yeah, you know, for instance, under professional development, professional practice development, we had Rosa Shen, who who started Equity by Design, and she gave a talk about how to negotiate, you know, your salary, right? So, and then we had Dee Nichols, she's an activist, and especially with what happened to George Floyd, there was a lot of discussion about activism, and we had women who spoke about their gender, women, but we also the other day, a month ago, we had I have the cheat sheet over here. I just like the number of women that come across our committee is just incredible. We had Nicole Holland Dennis, who designed the African American burial grounds, and she gave a presentation, and she's also given a tour in July of the place. And
this is all in the website. Is there, I mean, are all the programs on the website so we can, you know, attend some of them?
Yeah, well, we roll out our programming on a monthly basis. So just this past month, for the month of March, we had a film screening with Dorte Mandrup. I'm not sure if you know who she is. She's actually a Danish architect, again, doing amazing work in Europe. And we had a panel with three women from different firms at Marble, Perkins Eastman, and FX Collaborative to talk about advancing your career, like different stages of your career. How do you advance your career? We have one where actually I have a call tomorrow with a consultant to talk about how to navigate stress and achieve mental, emotional, and physical health over during the
pandemic.
That's
important nowadays.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and every year we celebrate, we have a happy hour to celebrate women who are elevated to fellows. So every year it's a networking event, and all the new fellows share with us their path to fellowship and lessons learned and what they have accomplished in their careers. So I can just go on and on.
So Vivian, you've been so generous with your time, especially to the women in architecture. And I remember you telling me that you always want to pay it forward, you know, because the more you give, the more people are willing to share. So what's your philosophy around like giving back and mentorship?
Wow. I think, you know, I do it with such pleasure just because I feel that, when I was growing up, quote unquote, growing up, and I went to school, there weren't a lot of women mentors that I can look up to. And I remember, when I was in college, and one of the women that I really looked up to was Julia Morgan. And, you know, and she's been dead, you know, for 60 years, right? And I just felt like there someone that I... to be aspired, someone you can look up to. I think it's I feel a sense of duty almost to do that. And because we do want more women, we want to bring equity in our profession, equity in the workplace. We need to be inclusive. And this is all the things that we should have done this long ago. And but I'm really optimistic in where things are going. And I just want to talk a little bit about Woods Bagot and our initiative and bring equity to our firm. So every year during the International Women's Day, March 8th, our global firm issues out a presentation deck, and it has all the stats and to show how we're performing as a firm. So this past year, we are at 950 people now, and we're growing. 52% of our entire group are women, 52%, which is great. And then, however, and then we break down the chart based on different leadership levels, right? So we look into where we are in terms of associates, senior associates, associate principals, and principals. And now, unfortunately, we are only at 34% for women in terms of the principal level. And the target is to get to that 50%. So we still have a lot of work to do. However, what is optimistic is that right under principals, we have the associate principal tier. And under the associate principal, we are 42% women, which means that we are building the pipeline, right? So eventually the 42% is going to be hopefully elevated to that 34% and becoming principals. So that is something that we care a lot about when we do promotions and elevations. We do make sure that we are elevating people across the board based on talent, but obviously making sure that no one is excluded. And I think the pipeline. You know, as a seasoned architect, and it's important for us not just to constantly elevate and promote women in architecture, but is really to bring the next generation. So for Women in Architecture Committee, we have various mentoring programs, right? We have the SPEE mentoring, which is catered for women from in the profession already. So anywhere from, you know, 1 year to 30 year experience. We pair people up with women with 30 plus years as mentors. And then the second tier, we have the practitioner student mentoring program, where we go to college and universities, and especially schools who have underrepresented student body. A lot of students with maybe they are the first year going to college, and women students, female students with various ethnic and cultural backgrounds. And then we have, we just had our very successful career day, the Next Gen Career Day, where we reach out to high school students. So we teamed up and collaborated with ACE Mentoring Group and the CTE Group from the City of New York. And we had 80 students sign up from 40 across 40 high schools in New York school district. And then we, and of course there were some dropouts, but we still had a very robust group of students who signed up, and we actually even offer 4 scholarships, personal, private scholarships. So for the students who are in their senior year and applying to college. So, and all those all our sort of initiative as Women in Architecture, that what we want to do to promote more women in our profession, not just women who are already architects, and promoting them to a different tier and to the leadership level, but also starting to, from the very young, from high school.
So Vivian, you have 2 full-time jobs.
I do, but don't tell my boss.
but you know, like, this brings me to my last question about the future of the profession, but you pretty much summed it up based on, you know, our conversation. But in terms of the future of our profession, there's a lot of negative feedback about architects not getting paid well. We're burning out. I mean, people are quitting after COVID, especially with the work-life balance. And just to give you an example, my best friend and my cousin, their daughters wanted to go to architecture school, and they asked me. This was like years ago. So they asked me, Tita Aya, like Aunt Aya, I want to go into architecture. Do you suggest it? So I gave them all the facts like this. You're going to have to pay your dues. You really have to love it, because in the beginning, you won't get paid that much. But you have to really, it will build a lot of resilience, being an architecture school that can carry, you know, through your entire life, whether you pursue, you end up being an architect or entrepreneur. So I laid it out to them. One went to architecture school and one went to nursing school.
Okay.
So I didn't want to feel, you know, like I jaded them, but I was just stating the facts. But in your case, I mean, just the future of the profession, you're so super optimistic about, you know, the architecture profession and where it's going. But can you like shed a little more light in terms of, you know, like why it's good to be in our profession? And maybe make it a little more positive, because I'm sure you've heard in the groups that people are quitting. They want to go do UI UX. They want to do a lot of other things, but it all boils down to passion, I think. And that's what you answered earlier. If you love what you do, stick to it, right?
But it's not just about passion. I mean, I think design is a wonderful way to express yourself. And but what's really amazing, Aya, is that we have the ability to create places and spaces that really influence how people think, how they feel. You know, if you design a wonderful space where encourages interaction with other people, if you design a hospital with a lot of natural light, people will heal much faster. You design a public school or a school with big windows and open spaces, and students learn better. If you design your house, you know, and with the circulation, the room, you know, with plenty of sunshine, you know, you're happier. If you design your office space, when you have collaborative spaces, you know, to talk to your colleagues, if you design a plaza, if you design a theater, everything that we design, right, has a impact on the human experience. And I think that it's an incredibly powerful skill set and tool that we have to be able to create these kind of experiences for the people, for the human being. And if you think about it, there's how many professions out there are like that? You know, not a lot, right? And people sometimes don't realize it, but if you're in a space that makes you happy, you know, it's not like, oh, you know, this space has something. I mean, it's so subtle. And of course, you know, there are also spaces that are depressive. You know, I think the way we think about prison design, or, you know, how the incarceration is really, I think, is very negative in the portrayal of how design has failed us. I think architecture do better. We need to make sure that what we design is to celebrate the human experience, not to oppress the people living in them. And if you look around, you know, humans connect to certain places and spaces, you know, when you travel, when you see a building, or even, you know, sitting in a nice, comfortable living room, you know, you'll remember that. And a lot of times it's the feeling that you get is what you'll remember the most. And I think that's incredibly powerful.
Wow, this is great. I should tell all my nieces and nephews to listen to this part when they ask.
Have them call me. Have them give me a call. I have like...
Yeah, that's so inspiring. I haven't designed the last one was 2 years ago. I designed a mall. It's anyway, but it feels really good. You're right. It's not necessarily about the money, but the spaces you create for other people, and you see people enjoying the space and creating new memories with their families and friends.
Yeah.
Right?
The experience, so, right? Yeah. You remember that. Yeah.
Well, thanks for you know, sharing that. So Vivian, what's next for you?
Oh my God, a vacation.
Okay, where?
Actually, I am going. I'm taking a little mini vacation. I'm going down to Jacksonville for a conference, but I'm gonna piggyback and I'm gonna take a few stay a couple of days in Charleston and then another day in Savannah. But I'm actually my next big vacation is in July, where I'm going with my partner and his family down to Africa. We're doing a safari, so.
Oh, wow. You need that. And no cell phone, okay?
No cell phone, no nothing. No, yeah, nothing. I'm gonna be in the open with the wild animals and the experience nature.
Yeah, that's you need that because you've given back so much to the community. You need to recharge so you
I
can
need to
give back
recharge.
more.
That's right. Well, it's definitely, I think we need to take care of ourselves in order to take care of others, right? So
Yeah.
that's important to keep that in mind. So hopefully, if we can get this the next event set up with our speaker. Her name is Megan Suarez, and we're super excited to meet her. I'm gonna meet her for the first time tomorrow, and we're hopefully she can give us some tips and pointers about how to find that perfect balance of work and life.
Yeah,
So,
please do share with us.
yeah.
It was a pleasure talking to you, Vivian. Thank you for your time, and I can't wait for all the women and men to hear our episode.
And I thank you so much for the great work that you do with Architect My Life podcast. And by the way, we share your podcast every month in our monthly committee meetings. So keep up the good work and keep promoting, elevating, and advancing women in our profession. Thank you for everything you do, Aya.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Architect My Life podcast. We'd love to hear from you on social media using the hashtag Architect My Life podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at @Aya_ArchitectMyLife. That's Aya, AYA underscore Architect My Life. And for women firm owners, I invite you to join the Architect My Life private Facebook group. If you haven't already, we'd appreciate it if you'd subscribe to the show, as well as rate or review us wherever you access podcasts. And if you think you have something to add to the conversation through your success running a business, we invite you to apply to be a guest in one of our upcoming episodes. Visit architectmylife.com/podcast to learn more. Maybe you're not in a position to share your success story yet. That's okay. Take your business to the next level with our coaching and online courses. Get everything you need at architectmylife.com. Remember, there is a way to manage it all so you can achieve more. I'm Aya Schlachter. Thanks again for listening.